From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the 11th edition of Coastline Beneath the Surface. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. 11 people, diverse in age, ethnicity, and political leanings, are engaged in a year-long experiment in civil discourse. Each month, we bring you a conversation with members of the group. We're observing how the tone and quality of the conversation changes over the course of the year, and whether people with different views grow to value time with one another. The master plan for this episode was to practice with our Thanksgiving nemesis, you know, the one that makes you want to leave the table or the whole gathering. We would find an ideological match in the group to role play with the challengee. We would first remind ourselves about the basic civil discourse principles we've been learning and then try them out. But it quickly became clear this exercise held little relevance for the group. With us today, Cedric, founder of the nonprofit Support the Port, Jim, a glass artist and New Jersey transplant, Lee, an actor and woodworker, Lydia, artist and mom to a toddler, Daryl, a retired engineer and occasional wizard, Carl, a musician and Army veteran, Connette, an insurance broker, Joe, a real estate broker and GOP volunteer, and Catherine, a nurse, real estate broker, also involved in the GOP, and Joe's wife. Welcome, BTSers.
Hey.
TGIF.
Yes. What is different for you this November versus November of 2018 when you think about going to the Thanksgiving dinner table? Joe.
I think hopefully that it will be an enjoyable thing, time to reacquaint ourselves with our families, and in my particular situation, my three sons are, two of them have the same type of thought process as I do. My middle son, of course, are we're polar opposites, but yet we have a great time together discussing the issues of the day. So I look forward to it. And of course, I always have Kathy to referee for me if things get a little hairy. But
they have gotten hairy, and she said no more discussion of politics at the dinner table. Do you think it could be different this year, Catherine?
I mean, there's respect and love between them that can be, you know, can kind of bridge the gap in the belief system, and Even though we discuss politics, it's just not on a down and dirty level anymore. It was getting a little heated for a while, but I think that they, you know, with maturity and love and just listening to one another, because even though Joe Jr. is very different thought process, he still has some very good thoughts. He's brilliant, you know, and this is his career, so he can bring a lot of understanding. And it's interesting because he will call Joe Sr. for advice on some of the political issues and challenges he's facing. And he even called on him to be a substitute for a debate. He wanted Joe to, you know, be the opposing with his candidate at a debate. And so I think there is that respect. And that's the difference. It's respect for the individual. And, you know, you can have whatever thoughts you want, but if I respect you, then I'll listen. And that's what I see.
Lee?
As the only child of deceased parents, my holiday meals are spent with a family of my choosing. So they're not as likely to be wildly divergent political views at those tables as there were in the tables of my youth.
There was a component of your family.
You mean my cousins?
Perhaps. Maybe that's what you've talked about, but you've talked about opting out of family
gatherings.
Yeah,
opting out of my cousin world.
Yeah.
The racist, homophobic, xenophobic anti-Semites? Yeah, I've opted out of that.
Carl, what is it going to be like at your holiday table this year?
My holiday table will probably be calm because I don't have a lot of arguments.
But you are the guy that came into this process.
I knew he was going to say that.
Saying, what happened? Why can't we disagree with each other anymore? Why is it that if we disagree, we have to then hate each other?
Maybe I should say this. I don't think that the Thanksgiving table is the place for us to have those conversations. I try to reserve that time for family time and for us to talk about what's going on in our world and with each other, more versus who agrees with this or who agrees with that. We already know that about each other, so we don't need to expound upon that while we are sitting in Thanksgiving dinner. Maybe after dinner's over, they might get into, because my sons, they have come closer to being in the same yard, but they were on two different directions. So they used to have some very emotional conversations. But I try to reserve, well, not try, so I do.
It's a family, it's a family holiday table. Yeah. You're listening to Coastline Beneath the Surface. Today we have Cedric, Connette, Jim, Lee, Lydia, Carl, Joe, Daryl, and Catherine. So,
good point.
I think we need to figure out if we're going to do this exercise or if we're going to scrap it and just go down the road of something else.
I hate improv. Let me just say, let somebody.
I don't have any experience because with Thanksgiving.
Here's the thing: is there any
being a problem?
Really, you don't?
No, never in my whole life. Is there going to be somebody who I'm sitting eating with who's going to have a different opinion?
Okay,
than me?
So then that's.
I never had to deal with that.
That's not the triggering.
But if I had to,
man, you're limited,
I'd go somewhere else.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that?
If I had to,
you didn't hear that.
I'd go get Chinese and leave.
Mongolian grill.
Okay, so when you think about yourself having gone through a year of this with this group, what's one major thing that you want to be able to take away from it? Like, I learned this, or actually, I found value in this, or I practiced this. Or did you learn, I really do want to just hang out with people who think like I do?
I definitely do. I definitely do not want to associate on a regular basis with people that I perceive on the right, which would be... Yeah, I mean, after this, I'll never see these... After this, I'll never see these guys again. I guarantee it.
You know, and on the other side...
That's a reality. I hate to say it, but it's true.
And I was thinking just the opposite.
Yeah.
Okay. And... I would have no problem, you know, spending, time socially with anybody around the table, you know, and because there's so much here.
And what is here, Joe? Why is
a bunch of people
why
here?
Why are these people? Why is the conversation that you have with these people worth something when you could be with either people that you love or people who think the way you think? I mean, what value do you get from this?
If I'm continually exposed to just people like myself, man, that scares the hell out of me.
Why?
Because, I mean, there's so... Everybody sitting around the table has brought a whole different, you know, life to this table than I did.
Our civil discourse group members are apparently not facing the same conversational minefield over their Thanksgiving tables that news media around the country are screaming about, so basic training for that event isn't so relevant. In the next segment, we scrap our original agenda and go where the deeper conversation leads. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Beneath the Surface. Listening to Coastline Beneath the Surface. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We started out with our group of 9 people today set to practice uncomfortable or extremely partisan discussions at the Thanksgiving table. But nobody here is worried about that, so I'm asking the group to explain what they've learned from this 11-month process. While Jim just told the group, no offense, but he will never again spend time with people on the other end of the political spectrum, Lydia explains a standout moment for her.
The one thing that sticks out to me that was from the abortion debate was Catherine's point of view about abortion versus mine are completely divergent. But the thing that was most interesting to me from that point of view is that we actually come from our point of views from the very same place, which is that we want the best thing for children. And hers is that every child has the right to be born, and mine is that children only deserve to be born to parents that are prepared to love and care for them completely. But I did find it really interesting that our justification for our point of view was exactly the same. But on a different note, in terms of the role play, I come from a family full of Republicans. People don't argue negatively. People are very rational and respectful. So it's even would be hard for me to have a pretend argument, because I think people at my Thanksgiving table talk about politics a little, not a lot, but when they do, it's very, very measured and very, very sensitive.
Catherine, you wanted to...
I just wanted to say, you know, what is it about this group? I think all of us are here voluntarily, which means that we are here because we chose to be open to the discussion, to share our views. But I think, so there was a presupposed, you know, civility to the fact that we are here voluntarily.
Daryl, do you think you've learned anything from this process? Or do you think that you value spending time in conversation with people with divergent worldviews any more than you did before you started?
I have always enjoyed meeting new ideas and new directions, and I often ponder as to how in the hell they came up with the ideas that they did and where they come from. But I recognize my viewpoint of society as being an aggregation of individuals is confirmed in this group. And I found everyone to be, you know, 10 other individuals in here, and their opinions are all valid. And I enjoy hearing them. I honestly can't think some of the rationales that people have come up with, but I can respect that. And I think that's a key to what you have advocated and what Arthur Brooks advocates of respect for differing viewpoints. And I think that... As a group, I think the opinions are worthwhile. And the only thing that I wish is that we would stop looking backwards and turn around and face forward.
What do you mean?
Too many times I have heard about this is the way it was. This is what's happened. This is how I'm sorry, Carl, but this is how I grew up, and this is how I form my opinions and stuff. And I would like for us to change our focus and say, hey, we screwed up. Things have been bad. We've messed up. Let's turn around and see what we can do and what direction we can go for the future. Many of us in this group are focused on the future. And we know we've screwed up in the past. We know that we haven't been the kinds of people that we would like to have been. Our society has not been what it should have been.
I don't want to guess at the issue that you're talking about, but I feel like there's something specific behind what you're saying.
Well, yes. It's the racial tones that have been brought up by Cedric and Carl. And I can apologize all I want, but the kind of people that I'm dealing with are people who are focused on the future. What can we do to make Chadbourne better? What can we do? We know that it's a mess. We know that it was caused a mess. What can we do for the future? Let's change our emphasis. If we dwell on the past, then we're mired in that mud.
So, Daryl, I think this, you are articulating the tension that is always in that conversation about race. And Cedric, I know that you have I'm going to let you step up for this one.
Because, I have nothing to say.
Really? I don't believe that.
Yeah, that's a lie.
Oh.
So let's start about Daryl saying, I will apologize basically until the cows come home, but that stops us from moving forward. What do you say to that? Because there's an inherent assumption there.
Before he even got to the apology, I was already starting to zone him out when he said the triggering thing of let's face forward and forget about the past.
Okay. Now tell us why that's triggering.
Because when we talk about 9/11, it's never forget. When we talk about other terrorist tragedies that have happened to this country, we reflect on it, we highlight it on an annual basis. But when it comes to race relations, slavery, coups, race riots, all of those things, you want black people to just forget about it and move forward towards the future, when really what you're saying isn't, you shouldn't be saying that to black people, you should be saying that to other white people, right? Like, let's forget the old values that you all have built your establishments on and relook at the paper that you guys have put together as a Declaration of Independence and reevaluate the structures of the government policies and see if, like, everybody is actually being catered to in these policies as they're being made.
That's an example of an issue that came up during the Better Angels exercise when Carl explained why he never feels represented by government, no matter who he votes for. So
it even happened today during this conversation when people are talking about arguing over how you saying you said something about the difference between opinions and things that's brought through hate. When you all are arguing about politics and the opinions on policies, whether you respect each other and those policies still let you roam the way that you want to roam, a lot of those policies oppress people like me. And I care, it's more than just an opinion around this policy, because I'm actually truly affected by these policies. And it's more than just an opinion. It's another line of oppression, another fence that we have to fight through or build a bridge over this troubled water to try to live a full and meaningful life. It sucks living in this type of space, right? And it's just a privilege to be able to carry conversations around it and not literally have to go into the middle of the circle and actually deal with the reality of it. And so it's easy when you're able to talk conversations around it to tell somebody that's in the midst of the actual physical
results
of that to say, let's forget about the past, when the past is the whole reason why all of this has been set. It's been decisions that's been made from you all's great grandfathers that have affected my father, me, and right now, currently my son too, as well, as I'm going through things that learning that the way that society has been set up is the reason for why I have to do these things. So that's kind of why I've been quiet the whole time. I've just been digesting this conversation.
If you're just joining us, it's the 11th episode of Coastline Beneath the Surface. We started with our civil discourse group today, intending to practice for those difficult moments over the Thanksgiving table. But we quickly learned that's not reality for our members. What is real is an ongoing tension over discussions of race. We've been here before, but this day, Daryl, who runs a project called Strawberry Fields, an effort to help a community of color in rural Chadburn, North Carolina, said he was tired of looking backwards and feeling like he still needs to apologize for the sins of his white forefathers. He also said a backward focus doesn't help people who feel oppressed. Cedric is explaining why he finds Daryl's comments triggering, how the actions of white people in the past affect people of color today, and why Daryl's remarks don't acknowledge present-day America and Cedric's daily experience. Cedric continues.
I'm glad that you brought it up, because I usually feel like I'm the one that brings up race, but like, it's a huge topic. It's real. We just unveiled a marker right on Market Street, right around a couple blocks from here, of the only coup that ever happened in Wilmington. That's finally being successful, only finally being acknowledged from the state. So these are, like, when we talk about policies, it's a lot of things that we need to go back to the past and actually look at and figure out how can we make that better for the future.
And to be clear about what Cedric's talking about, that's 1898, the only recorded coup d'etat in American history, when a cabal of white people forced out not just elected officials who were African American, but also terrorized all the black citizens.
And progressive whites.
Yes, and ran them out of town. We don't know how many people were killed in that event. The estimates range from anywhere from a dozen to hundreds. We really don't know. And we also don't know what that has meant in Wilmington in terms of the lingering effects, because it's only 121 years ago, which in terms of who owns property here, where people live, what assets they have. That is something that we've been exploring. How can we document the effects of that as they exist in 21st century Wilmington?
If you focus so much on what has happened, you're always looking behind you and saying, well, I want the future to be better. I want to do something about the future. I want Cedric to do something about the future. What can you do? All right, you've learned from it. You've got that experience in the background. You've got it more than I've got it. Okay, I don't have that. But I know that if I go around thinking that I am oppressed, that I have been held back because of this, that, and the other, then I'll never accomplish what abilities and potential that I have. You just won't do it because you're looking always in the back.
I agree.
Can I jump in for a second?
Yeah,
because because if we don't look at the past and try to correct it today, there is not going to be any change in the future, regardless of what you do in Chadburn. Because on your way out to Chadburn, and you're driving on the highway, you're a white guy, you're not going to get pulled over, you're not going to get harassed. Cedric and a couple of his friends driving out there to see what you've built out in Chadburn is going to get targeted because he's black, and he's going to get pulled over possibly, and he's probably going to suffer some, maybe not bad experience, but not good. And that is something that you cannot say doesn't exist, because we know it exists.
Lee, I think you've got a very wrong perception of what goes on between here and Chadburn. And I really do think that it's not as quite as bad as you think.
I'm glad you continue to say what you're saying, because it shows that we still have problems that we have to fix. Without looking back to see why things are the way they are, you would be a voice like many others who say, ooh, why do those black people not just do this or do that? Or why aren't they just working hard? Or why aren't this way? Or why aren't they just, they should be doing this, and they should, it's easy for you to say what I should be doing. But you don't know the things that caused me to be where I am. You act like I just walked into this. I didn't. I didn't just walk into it. I'm not looking back and feeling sorry, though, for me. But I am feeling sorry for my country. I am feeling sorry that you are busy right now feeling sorry about what's happening to some people in Ukraine, or in Iraq, or in Turkey, or in Syria. But you don't care that same, you don't have that same concern about what's happening to people right here in this country. We don't. But it's easy for us to project our love and caring somewhere else when it doesn't really affect us. It has no really price for us to pay. But the price to pay is that every American should be treated exactly the same. 2 weeks ago, I was in my car with my sons in Hampstead, riding down the street. And a highway patrolman pulled me over for no reason. But he said, well, I think your plates are expired. But if he had punched my plates into the system, he'd see they're not expired. But he pulled me over because it was three African-American people riding in my car, which is a pretty big, you know, classy kind of car. But you pulled me over for nothing, for no reason whatsoever. That didn't happen in 1890. That happened in 2019. But you say I should get over that.
And you say we act like we're oppressed.
But, and you say that I shouldn't be concerned every time my sons, my daughter, my grandkids, who are in college, by the way, but I have to worry about whether they can get from my house to a college in Mount Olive or here in Cape Fear or wherever they are. I have to worry whether they can get there safely or not without being stopped and harassed or bothered. But I should get over it.
It's the 11th edition of Coastline Beneath the Surface. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. You're listening to Coastline Beneath the Surface. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're nearing the end of our year-long experiment in civil discourse. Our group of 11, 9 on this Friday before Thanksgiving, has said they don't expect tension at the family table this holiday, but they do still have a lot to say in the group about race. We're hearing from Carl, U.S. Army veteran, retired also from New Hanover County Public Schools, now a musician.
But, again, I'll say this, and I don't want a price for it. I don't want anybody to pay me for it. But I spent 20 years of my life dedicated to this country because I love it. I really love my country. I have arguments with my kids about this. I love my country. But I expect my country to love me and to love my family and to love all people inside of this country. There should be no perceptions about somebody because they wear a scarf over their head, because they dress differently. There should be no perceptions. I don't look at you with your white beard and your hair and say, oh, I have a preconceived idea about who you are. I don't. When I walk in here, I see a man. And based on how I interact with that man, how you interact with me, is how I'm going to treat you. However, again, I said the last time you say these things because you're white, but I'm not going to say that this time. I'm just going to say this. Your life is not the only life on earth. The opportunities that you've had, every person around this table hasn't had those same opportunities for one reason or another. They may have been because it's racist. Maybe they came from a poor family. The lady who was on the TV the other day said she came from a coal miner. She was a coal miner's daughter. And if she'd have stayed where she came from because of her accent, she would have been treated like a fourth-class citizen. But in all of the world, in all of the earth, the one country that should never allow any type of issues like that to occur is this one. Because we're so busy poking our fingers in other people's countries, say, oh, that shouldn't happen, this shouldn't happen, but this one. So you have to remember where we came from.
And so.
And the causes that have caused other people not to be so fortunate or so lucky, because it didn't just happen that way. If my mama had left me a $200,000 house or a business or something, I'd probably be doing pretty good financially. I'd leave that to my kids and project. It's not like we don't believe in passing on, but how can you pass on nothing?
And I know there's a gap here, Cedric. Yeah. I'll let you.
I don't want to. So basically, I appreciate Daryl, and I appreciate the work that he does. It's not like he's saying these things, and then at night he puts a hood on and burns crosses. What I'm saying, well, I don't, No, I'm just playing. what I'm saying is that I think with progressive whites, when they get in a space where they are helping or supporting or assisting blacks, I feel like they think that gives them a privilege to now speak on the black experience or to speak to black people with the, this is what you should do, should not do. And if you actually study history, you would have learned that that has not been a successful way to approach racial reconciliation. And so to answer your question fully about why I came to this table voluntarily, and to also answer your question as well, Daryl, is about facing forward and looking at the future. I came to this table to voice my opinion because every time I wake up every day, I'm trying to fight for the advancement of black people to be able to live a full and meaningful life, whether that's opening my voice on a radio station to give my opinion so that others can learn from it, or whether that's going to schools to speak to students, kids, et cetera, et cetera. And then also to answer that question, there is an answer that does exist within the past, because before the 1898 actually happened in Wilmington, the utopia that we want so much existed. It fully existed. Wilmington was 56% African American population. After 1898, 34%. Currently today, 19%.
There was a thriving black middle class too, entrepreneurs,
very thriving entrepreneur, political. It was more than just political. The Thomas Miller was a loan shark. He was loaning money to black people and white people. And so when you talk about racial issues and it makes you feel a certain type of way, it should, because things still haven't changed from it yet. But the conversation, that the dialogue that you want to engage in, isn't towards black people, it's towards the white people that have set the tone for how we interact with each other to this day.
I think that there are two elements of this, and correct me if I misspeak here or if I oversimplify something, but part of it is the never forget part. Like, even if it was an equal playing field today and everybody felt like they had the same opportunity, there still is this, there was a theologian in Washington who wrote a book about America's original sin, slavery. And he's a white theologian, and he started to learn about the very present impacts on people of color when his son was part of a baseball team, a softball team, I think, in Washington, D.C. So he started unpacking this, and what is it like for a black family to raise a child in the city versus a white family. And the black family always, for example, has to have a conversation about when you get your driver's license and you start driving a car, here's how you survive a stop by a police officer. That's just an example of it. The other part of this is both Carl and Cedric, I think, are trying to say, it's not that we're even looking backwards. It's not the same in November 2019 if you walk down the street as a white person versus walking down the street as a person of color. You will have a different experience on the street, in a professional setting, in any setting, wherever you go, you have a different experience than you, Daryl, would have.
My interest rates for trying to get a house, trying to get a car would be totally different from anybody else's at this table.
What would they be?
Be probably triple, quadruple the interest percentage than what you all may would look at to buy a car.
And it's not always about remembering, Daryl. It's about being reminded. It's not like I don't walk around remembering or thinking about slavery or about the fact that I grew up in an era where there was a different water fountain for a black kid and a white kid. I don't continue to think about those things, but I'm reminded of them involuntarily by other things that happen now today. Therefore, I know that there's still work to be done. But listen, I can come in this room and have any conversation with anybody about anything and be as dedicated and committed to making sure that the things we do better our country because of my hopes and my dreams and my aspirations. But that does not change the fact of a reality. I'm not sitting here saying, woe is me. I travel the world. I go different places. I do things. I'm not sitting here feeling sorry. However, the only place that I ever go in the world that I have to define my color or define myself by a color is here. When I go and live in a country where my wife's from, in Turkey, no one asks me my color. When I go to Germany or lived in Italy, nobody asks me when I filled out a piece of paper what color I was. Nobody cares. But as soon as I come back home, this is my home. As soon as I come back here, then color has such a huge relevance to people. What color I am? Okay, so now we start with this and that and this and that. It shouldn't matter. But it's not that I keep remembering or reliving it. It keeps being put in my face.
Right. I just passed the Confederate statue on the way here. How can I forget about the past when I see slave owners on my way to work every day?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. How would you remember now? This racial thing, I continue to try to stay away from it because I want us to have a complete conversation about this American experience that we have.
I apologize.
I do. No. Wait. I do. But it's not going to go away now. It's not. I don't think it'll ever go away. Until
what?
Until they get rid of the statues and they give black people full access.
Reparations. I will tell you, there isn't until, but
property,
it's,
money,
it's kind of sad, but
access,
it will go away.
Policies.
When the ratio of white to dark-skinned people changes. And it's coming.
It's a conversation on Beneath the Surface, our year-long experiment in civil discourse. The conversation is about race, which has been the source of ongoing tension in the group, a deeper source of tension for some than the extreme partisan divide.
I don't disagree with you in anything you said, and I got to say thank you for what you gentlemen just presented here, because it's reality. The challenge we have is where do we go from here in changing attitudes and changing what's happening. And here's what the challenge becomes. And Darryl, when he made his talk, he really believes that in what he's saying, and he's taking the action that he believes has to be done to change it. And I think that every one of us sitting around the table, in this room anyway, really believes that, and if you ask about our life's experience, I think you will see, everybody around this table has taken steps in what we believe has to be done, we did. But when I hear Cedric talk about reparations and property and that type of thing, I'm thinking as a psychologist now, and I'm thinking in terms of the impact on the majority of our society, which happens to have the pigmentation of the skin that I have, is the reaction is, hey, that happened 100 years ago. Why are we still being blamed for the sins of our fathers?
And that's exactly the point when this conversation always
comes.
This is where, there are a lot of white people who think that but won't say it out loud. Like, they know that it's a minefield, but they don't really understand why. And so I feel like
you benefit from the privilege of those decisions that was made. When that happened, let's forget slavery, right? Let's just go back to 1898. Those are my great-great-grandfathers who had businesses, who had property, who had a legacy that they were ready to pass down for generations on to generations on. Even after already losing, even after already building y'all's great-grandfather's houses that they got to live in off of our backs that they didn't have to pay for, they already had an establishment that they can build off of. Just that simple head start owes us reparations, just from that simple fact. But then when you go to 1898 and all of, not even just my great-grandfathers or whatever, but their cousins and their friends and the folks that they affiliated with, all are taking out all of these businesses, all of these residencies, all of these housing places where people lived. If that was passed on, generations to over the generation like your families had the privilege to do, I wouldn't be here saying woe is me and that I'm feeling oppressed. I would have the same open mindset and the same freedom to spread my wings and flap and fly wherever I want to go and look at life in whatever way I want to and argue back and forth strongly, thoroughly about opinions and politics and reside in whatever, whichever space, because I know that my family's still okay, our businesses are okay, and we're healthy, and we still can go and do the things that we want to do in life. But because that didn't happen, and I can't get those things, this is the route that I have to take to try to gain these things back.
Lydia.
Going back to what's the value of discussions like this, for me, like you said earlier, I approach a lot of this Republican-Democrat situation from, you know, an intellectual policy level. But until I'm in a room with Cedric and Carl, you know, Carl and I are on the same political side. And when we were talking about Trump last time, you know, I'm looking at, you know, how did he breach the law? But Carl's the one that always reminds me that what would, you know, how does Trump and what he's done compare to a crime committed by by a man in Wilmington walking down the street? Like, how, you know, bringing it down to the level, you know, of a regular person, but also an African-American person. And then, like, just with what Cedric was saying, I love to come in here and talk about policy. But, you know, I'm a benefactor of the Trump tax plan. And in terms of education, you know, with the tax deficit and the way that that may affect access to education, which is supposed to be something that's, you know, going to equalize inequalities in our country. If I'm, you know, my daughter, if she's in a school district that I don't like, I can privately educate her. I can send her to a charter school. I have all of these options and choices that I take for granted. And it's not until I sit in a room with Cedric to have it explained that people that are affected by these policies don't have choices. And for me, I mean, it takes hearing that to even remember that not everybody has the level of choice and mobility that I have, even though I like to, you know, talk about how Trump is a disgrace, I'm still a beneficiary of the economic policies he's put in place, or, you know, the way that he may be, you know, structuring society or giving power to people. I'm still a beneficiary of that, and other people are not.
Daryl, you've been very quiet, and you've been taking this all in. Where are you now? What do you think about what
I understand, and I stick with my position that I'd like to see people turn around and face forward and say, look, you know, I've suffered this. I'm in a bad position. I'm in a bad place, but the future is brighter. And I don't hear that from our two gentlemen.
Because it's not.
Yeah. No, you know what it's like? Here's what it's like. Here's what it's like. It's like me and Carl going out in the hallway and me beating the shit out of Carl for the next 15 minutes. And then I stop beating the shit out of him.
No, we need to beep that.
And I stop beating the shit out of him. I say, you know what, Carl? I'm going to take you out to lunch now, and we're going to forget that ever happened. And we're just going to move forward. Now, meanwhile, he's limping and he can't see out of one eye, and I broke one of his fingers. But we're both equal now, and we're going to move forward together.
And he has
it's
a
ridiculous.
Hospital
bill. It's a ridiculous idea for anybody to think that we can move forward without looking at the past and correcting it. So it just can't be done.
I'm not advocating don't look at the past.
No, but
I'm saying turn your focus.
Okay, but I'm going to tell you that about that now.
You say that very simply. But the average black man can't walk in a bank and get a loan to open a business.
That's wrong.
I just won 75 grand.
No, but that's reality. This is what I'm trying to tell you.
Still being treated like I live in the projects.
Yeah.
And I'm like almost close to six figures right now. You know what I mean? And I'm like my experience has not changed to a six figure experience. People still look at me and sometimes ask me, do I have a criminal background? You know how bad that makes me feel? Like some people make me feel like I have to walk in rooms with shirts and tie on every room I walk in.
But I want you to understand though, it is not that a lot of black people don't understand what it means to move forward. It's not that a lot of black people don't know what it means to start businesses and do projects and do things to create income for themselves. They know, but that opportunity is not there. No one's giving them a loan. No, there's no business project set up. Just look in this city. You came in this city, tore up all the inner city stuff, all the parks, everything, turned it into tennis courts. You built a tennis court in the middle of a black neighborhood where nobody plays tennis but white people. And then the white people come to play tennis. I'm telling you, better the environment. You take away the playgrounds for little kids. They have nowhere to play, nothing, zero. Or you give it to somebody and then they sell it. They sold off the pool down here and over by Virgo. They sold it off to some swim team, but they'll let the little neighborhood kids come in every now and then just to make it look good. But see, it's not that they don't have the intention to do better things and make a better future. You saying look forward. Yes, look forward. But how do you get there without money? This country is a capitalist country. Capitalism is the heart. And if you don't have money, and no one will give you money, no one will lend you money, no one will give you a grant and help you do things, then don't tell me to go forward. Unless you want me to rob a bank. I can do that. But I don't think you want me to do that.
Looking forward is reparations for sure.
But I'm a little different than him. I don't want reparations. I just want the same opportunity. I don't want any reparations.
I want reparations. As long
as that's a point that we can all agree on. I want this equal opportunity, and every person in this country should have
the same opportunity. Yeah, but you're on the wrong boat, because that's not going to happen.
We should
and
have,
it's not happening. It's not happening.
We should have property
that we let me not say that it's not going to happen. I'm going to say it's not happening, and you have to accept that as a reality. That way you'll stop telling people to look forward and say, okay, I got to make you acknowledge what you did so that I can get you to help me move forward. See, that's that's the problem. If you won't acknowledge what you did to cause me to be in the situation that I'm in,
then you're going
to
add to the problem.
Then how am I going to get you to say, okay, Carl, you're right. This shouldn't have been like this, and I'm going to help you go that way. I see that you want to go that way. Here, take this 100 grand and go. Well, I'm down with it.
As a progressive white person that wants to help black people, you don't lead black people. That's adding to the problem. You support black people and what they want to do.
That's exactly what we're doing.
But it sounds like you're trying to lead us with the dialogue of what you're telling us that we should do, and not looking back and facing forward. That's a leadership direction that you're giving us. You should support us if we want to look in the past. You should support that we're looking in the past. If you want to look to the forward, you should support that. But either way, it's still us welcoming you to this space. Is just for support, not for you to lead us. We're not looking at you to be our savior. We know what we want, we know what we need, and if you can provide us with that, then thank you, we're very grateful for that. But if you just want to support us, we're very grateful for that too. But you start walking a thin line when you start trying to tell people where they should set their mind and focus and direct them.
That's this edition of Coastline Beneath the Surface. Lydia, Connette, Carl, Jim, Catherine, Lee, Daryl, Joe, and Cedric, thanks for being with us today. Our producer is Caitlin Freund. News producer is Rachel Keith. Ken Campbell is technical director. Beneath the Surface is a production of WHQR Public Media. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Beneath the Surface.